because a lot of questions have been coming to me in probably the last 6 months or so, and had an association with the book of Job. So instead of going into Exodus, which we normally would be going into, what's called the Torah section, I said I would speak on this one, so we can have a little bit of understanding. It's really not that difficult of a book to understand, but there's been an awful lot of interpretations of it, because it's the oldest known written section in the Tanakh. It's the oldest of them all. And so there's a lot of things about this man named Job or Yob or Yov. And his real name is Yovab. Yovab. It begins with an aleph and a yod and a bet. What is it the book of Job about? Job, J-O-B, Job. I'm sorry, what? All right.
All right, she got it. The sufferings.
Sufferings, okay. This is not really what I'm asking here, in a sense. How many of you actually read the book? Time by time, statement by statement, line by line, jot by jot, and tittle by tittle. Four chapters. Okay, who is Job? Who is he? Is he an unknown figure? He's a what?
He's a famous wealthy merchant.
Okay, he's just a famous wealthy merchant. Anybody else? What do you think? Who is Job?
He's a wealthy man who listened to God.
Okay. Now, as we go, I hope we can kind of understand a little bit about this man. He was not just anybody. He was the most powerful king in Eden. He is a descendant grandson of Esau. The oldest known book. Now, you read his name and you find out where he came from and the research that it boils down to. And the Bible says he's the greatest of all in the East, meaning in the land of Edom. Esau area. He's the son of Esau. His very first friend was what we call a duke. Remember we read in Genesis that there are 12 sons of Esau, and they were called dukes or kings or leadership. At this particular point in time, we have to take a look at this unknown man, which we have kind of figured he must be something else than what he really is. But let's talk about him before we continue. Because there's something that God had in mind. What did God have in mind? What was he, at least got to four chapters, what is he after? What is he trying to accomplish here? And why do we have it now for us? Are we supposed to learn anything from the book of Job? Or it just happened to somebody? An unknown individual. But he was the most powerful king in the land of Esau. Yes.
I'm sorry, I missed that. Where does it say that he was the king?
Have heard of Edom?
Yeah.
That's Esau's. It's Esau's territory. He had four sons. Each one of Esau's sons were called kings or called dukes. He had 12. Same number in Israel. And he was a very powerful, mighty. He is wealthier than everybody else in that land. But what kind of man was he? Okay, yes.
One of the things that I learned from it is what to do when someone has treated me terribly and what to do when I have treated someone terribly.
Okay, so if that's true, let me ask you a question, my dear wife. How mean was Job? How uncruel was he? How heartless was he to other people?
He wasn't, but the other guys were.
Oh, so it's not about, you're saying, we're not talking about the other guys. We're not talking about the other guys. This is about Job right now. Chapter 1. I didn't go into chapter 3. You should know me by now. I take in a detail things, and I said, what is it that God wants us to know? I am a person that studies words. The read my study words helps me to understand what God is trying or not trying. He actually does. I have to ask God, what is it that I see? What does he want me to see?
Blameless.
Upright he was.
How did he end up?
Well, he ended up quite well. God blessed him.
Well, God said before he sent the devil on him, he's the most righteous. He's the most righteous.
But in chapter 3, he's cursing the day.
Don't worry about that. We're talking about chapter 1. Let's get our orientation here first about the man named Job. If you don't understand him, you will miss the entire book of Job. God starts out Bereshit. He starts out with Bereshit, right? Why don't you just get to the New Testament? Forget about Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, all the prophets. Let's get right to the core. Oh, Jesus is raised from the dead. We're all saved. Right? Is that really what it's all about? Why did God start? Well, he starts from the very beginning. Now, remember what God said. Do not despise small things. You know why? God always works with small things. And the nations of this world are like a drop in a bucket to him. Yes.
I just wanted to camp on that word despise.
Uh-huh.
Because I was taught not to despise. As a giant major teaching in my life, okay? Because we are constantly tempted to despise. Every day, something's going to come in front of us and we're going to be tempted to judge it, despise it. And this is against the Lord. It's against Abba. And anyway, another thing I was going to say about Job is that as far as that goes, I feel like his example is for every one of us every day of our lives as we are challenged and tempted and we go through trial and tribulation, and we can use this as a way to realize that we need to be humble, accept what we can't change, and, you know, accept what God's will is for us for that day, even in trial. Mainly in trial.
All right. So we are to learn something. Now, we don't have to go in such great detail. I didn't really want to do that, okay? But it says there, verse 1, there was a man in the land of Uz, whose name was Eov, and that man was, it says, blameless, not guilty of anything. He was an upright man. What does upright mean? Does that mean he was cruel, heartless, mean, rotten? Or was he... what is an upright man today? What is in your interpretation today as upright man? Has integrity, okay. Do that which is right, okay. Honest and trustworthy.
Justified. It puts everything he does or puts his mind it's to justified. Or is involved with.
Now, this is very famous because we won't get into one of the men who talked about him, but they did. He even told us through his writings here that Job was the most just man. The most just man in all the East. And he praised him for being that kind of a man. And so now we have the word of God coming here. He's going to be doing something. He says, who feared God and shunned evil. What shunned evil mean? Leave? Okay. Huh. Shunned. Did he run away from it? Now listen, he was a very important man. He was a very powerful man. He wasn't just an ordinary person that says, oh, this is evil, I'm walking away. He was king. He instituted and went against it. And if you're contrary to him, you, since he was the king, he could bring forth punishment against you for doing something that's evil. Now, so everybody says, well, stay away from him because he's going to get me. Right? He was a just man, upright man. Before we go any farther, I want to talk about this man a little bit differently. Let's turn to Ezekiel. Well, this is the word of God. Remember who Ezekiel was? Who was Ezekiel? Okay, what was his office? He was what?
Priest.
He was a priest. Okay. He was one of those, the very first ones to be taken, as Daniel was one of the very first ones to be taken, when Nebuchadnezzar came on the first attack. Well, we're in the 14th chapter here. So let's go to verse 12. You'll learn something that God installed this prophet, this priest. The word of Yahweh, or the word of the Lord, or word, what do you want to call him, came and said something to me. Son of man, when the land sins against me by persistent unfaithfulness, I will stretch out my hand against it, and I will cut off its supply of bread, send famine on it, and cut off men and beasts from it. So in a country, consistently, persistently, always is what? Unfaithful. What's faithfulness? What is faithfulness? Loyalty. In this Hebrew word. Verse 14. Even these three men, Noach, Daniel, and Yov, were in it, this land of persistent unfaithfulness. They would deliver themselves by their wickedness. Righteousness. So there's something common between these three men that God wants us to say, zero in on these three men. So we say, okay, who is Noah? Well, he's the one that got in the flood, right? And who's Daniel? Well, he's the one that was in the king's castle. He was one of the royal families. Okay, what happened to him? We said, well, no, it was a flood. What happened to Daniel? And Job. Well, so we know what happened to Job. Just read Job. Bad things happened to him. But he called him righteous. Says whom? Yahuwah. Yahweh. Verse 15. If I cause the wild beast to pass through the land, and they empty it, and make it so desolate that no man may pass through because of the beast, then these three men, I live, says Yahuwah, they shall deliver neither son or daughters. They will be delivered Only they will be delivered. Those are pretty powerful statements about a man. So we're not talking about, you know, Tom, Dick, or Harry. We're talking about somebody who made a dent in the history. Did Daniel make a dent in the history of mankind? Did Noah make a dent in the history of mankind? Did Job make a dent in the history of mankind? Oh, how? What did he do? What did he do? We know what Noah did. We know what Daniel did. What did, were dreams given to Job like they were given to Daniel? No. Was warning given to Job like it was to Noah to build an ark? No. Yes, Daniel.
With each of these men, in particular with Job, is that he actually spent effort trying to deliver someone else
got it.
Out of their sins.
That's the thing that's common in them all, including
they all
Job.
Tried to deliver somebody else.
And we'll see as we keep on going, this is how righteous that man was. How honest he was. How dedicated he was. And you'll see that as we keep coming today. Maybe next week, obviously. We're going to find out that he was the man who would help somebody who's in serious trouble. He would deliver somebody from a chaos. He would, in a sense, protect them because he's the king. And he did it against the unjust people. That's what Job did. That's why God called him righteous. Let's continue on. But the reason why I'm doing this is because we need to kind of get a picture of exactly what God thinks about this man, not what we think about this man. Let's go down there. Oh, we don't have to go much farther than that. You get the picture, right? Let's go down to verse 30. Even Noah, Daniel, and Job in it, they, says the Lord, they will deliver neither son nor daughter. That's a pretty powerful statement, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was my question.
Does make sense to me. Why? What doesn't make sense? Can you deliver somebody? Oh, yes, I sure can. Who are you going to deliver? When God brings forth the curse upon the land, how are you as a man or woman going to deliver your son or your child from the curse? You cannot, because it is God who does the deliverance. He's the one that chooses who and who is to be delivered. What this basically says, you can't ride on the coattails of a righteous man. You cannot ride on the coattails of how wonderful your mother is, how wonderful your dad is, how wonderful your brother is, how wonderful your boss is. It won't work. What did the Messiah say? The gate is extremely narrow. Only you go through it. Now let's go a lot further. So shun means to cause to turn aside, make it not go away, cause the evil to go away. How do you go away? He was king. He could institute and bring that about. Now he had 7 sons and 3 daughters. In verse 3, his possessions were 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 5,000 household, very large household, and this man was the greatest of all the people of the East. So he wasn't just a nobody. And sometimes we forget about this. Now, we don't have scripture saying that Abraham was the greatest of, let's say, the other side of the river. Doesn't say that Isaac was the greatest. And here it says this man was. When did Job live? He's the great grandson of whom? Esau. Now, really? Now, he did something very unusual for someone who, quote, doesn't know the Torah. What did he do? Sacrifices. Now, if he was a pagan, a heathen, one that is not of house of Israel, why would he do that for? Why would he do that for? You got those questions you have to ask. Now, verse 6 is the days of the sons of Elohim came to present themselves before Yahuwah. And Satan also came among them. He actually, verse 2, he was required to come. All right? Chapter 2, rather. And of course, there was this question. And so, it would look, when you read between the lines, that the elders gave an answer of their performance to Elohim. However, apparently Satan didn't. So, what did he ask? He says, oh, where'd you come from? Well, that's a big shock. No, he knew where he was coming from. And he asked, okay. So Satan answered and said, from to and fro on the earth, from walking back and walking forth. Where's the devil? Oh, let's make Satan man. He's not up in heaven. He's walking this ground you walk on. He's not flying in a jet. He's walking on the ground you walk on. All right? Keep that part in mind. He is bound on this earth. He can't go any farther. Then Yahweh, or Elohim, said unto Satan, have you considered my servant Job, that none like him on the earth, this is God speaking, a blameless and upright who fears Elohim and shuns evil. Let me ask you a question. Don't answer it. Do you fit this requirement? Do I fit this requirement? Man, how would you or me fit such requirement that God would say before he punished him, chastised him, beat him down to a pulp, would he say that to you? Well, he said that about Job. Now, is God just playing on words? Is God lying here for the sake of lying? God playing a joke for the sake of playing a joke? No, this is what he said. And he said, Satan says, Job doesn't fear you for absolutely nothing. Look, you have made him a hedge around him. You know what a hedge is? That's a what? All the way around him, protection. No one could touch him. No one could get hands on him. The enemy can't come. Even Satan can't even do anything with him. Right? But now he says, verse 11, stretch forth your hand and touch all that he has, and he will surely do something. He's going to curse you. That's a very powerful word, by the way. We won't go into the details of that word in this particular book of Job. There's a lot of controversy. And then Yahweh said, okay, he has in your power. Now, yes.
I'm going to go back a moment. When Satan came before the Lord, because he came into the presence of the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
How can evil come into God's presence without...
When God calls, you better go. Chapter 2 tells you this, that he had to go because he was called to be there. Sometimes we can't picture the most holiest of all holies, the most holiest of all holies, would ever talk to a creep like Satan. No, this is God. He can do whatever he wants to do. He can talk to whomever he wants to talk to. He's not under the restrictions of, quote, holiness according to man at all. He doesn't have to obey the holiness of man. So that's a kind of a dead issue, right? He can do anything he wants to do. And we read the book of Job. As we keep going, I hope next week, you're going to find Job bitter against his creator. Mad, angry. Didn't curse him, but accused him and 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 accused him. Job, the most righteous man of the East. That's a pretty powerful thing, isn't it? Are you ready to face that? Have you ever met somebody in your life that blames God for what's happened to him? That's where Job is heading. And all the things that Job said about God in the last part of the book, God said, what Job said about me is true. What you three over here said about me is a lie. So let's take a look at this book. See, it's not so much about just Job. It's about how to look at God. View God through the eyes of God, rather than through an interpretation of Judaism or interpretation of Christianity. Pull away. Look and see what is written. See what is being said. This is a very laborious book. If you just read it and read it and read it. I have rewritten it a little bit differently. I wrote it in statements of phrases, because basically in Hebrew, they don't have sentences. This phrase, this phrase, this phrase, this phrase. There's no preposition, no verb, no object. Yes. He was a great-great-grandson of Abraham himself, but we're not going there. No, Job is the great-great-grandson of Abraham himself. No, the great-great-grandson of Abraham. He is the grandson of Esau. Yes, who was the son of, okay, who his father was, okay, Abraham. So he's related to Abraham by birth. All right. We'll find that some of the men too are also related to Abraham by birth. We won't go there today. It's not important. Yeah, so anyway, what did happen? What happened to him? So what did Satan do? Now there was, verse 13, a day when his sons and his daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And a messenger came to Job and said, the oxen are plowing and the donkeys feeding beside them, and the Sabaeans raided and took them away. And indeed, they killed all of your servants. I alone have escaped. Okay, bad news number one. Right? He still came. He could build up an army if he wanted to. But while he was still talking, what happened? He said now, the other one came and said, verse 16, a fire from Elohim fell from heaven and burnt up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I am the one that's escaped. Now, when you lose that much wealth, how much did he have? What was it over here? A lot of cattle, a lot of sheep, a lot of that. He was very, very wealthy. Wiped out. While he's still talking, Moment number three comes. The Chaldeans formed three bands, raided the camels, and took them away. And they killed the servants, and I'm the only one that's escaped. Well, that's three woes. I mean, if you were Job, woe number one, woe number two, and woe number three. Oh, wait a minute. Woe number four is coming. Woe number four. What does it say? Her sons and her daughters eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. A great wind came from across the wilderness and struck the four corners. Remember, it hit it all the way around like a whirlwind. Okay? Or a tornado. Or a hurricane. What do you want to call it? Twister. And the house came down and killed them. Now, that's woe number four. How do you think Job felt? It says he fell on the ground and worshipped. Kind of really not a good terminology, because he really didn't fall on the ground and worship in the sense that we worship. We sell the ground because the word worship, one of these days I'll explain what worship really, really means. It's not what you think it means. He says, naked I came in, I'm going to go back naked. Right? We got that, right? And then it says there, verse 22, in all this, he did not sin nor charge God with, and some of your translations weren't wrong. Other ones have a translation with foolishness or silliness. It actually, in Hebrew, it means to be unsavorous, being unseemly. He didn't charge God being unseemly. He didn't charge God with folly or silliness or foolishness. The verb form is to God to smear, to plaster, or to do rotten things to somebody. He didn't say that about God. Didn't charge him with that at this point in time.
So it sounds like he did charge God.
Yes, he did. We'll get this. The bad thing about that, how that's worded, it sounds like he didn't, but he really did. And it almost looks like just the opposite of what's being said. Because later on, he charges God with all of it. Charged God with every one of them. And of course, chapter 2, what took place? Again, there came a day when the sons came and Satan came also among them to present himself before Yahuwah. He was required to do so. And the same story comes. Where'd you come from? He says, I'm going back and forth to the earth. I'm walking pace back and forth on the earth. And God says, well, have you considered my servant Job, that none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears Elohim and shuns evil. And still he holds fast to his integrity, although you incited me against him to destroy him without cause. Now that's a really big word, isn't it? I mean, the devil tempted and incited God to do something that God would not normally do. I mean, the devil had the upper hand, right? He outsmarted God. He tricked him. Is that what it says? We get an impression that they take place, yes.
God was the one that drew attention to Job to start
in the first place.
With. He knew how he was going to play the hand.
So God, was he ensnared? Was he lured in to do something he really didn't mean to do, but he did it anyway? Therefore, God's guilty of sin, of maliciousness, of wickedness. Right? Well, none of us are going to say that to you. Yes.
Just to backtrack a second here. With the wind that took down the house with his kids in it, the wind, tornado, whatever that is, Lucifer did that. He controlled the weather to do that.
Only when he is permitted to do so.
So storms, tornadoes, and things like this, the devil can do if he's permitted to.
He can't. Well, God can't do that. He says, I brought this about. I did this. I'm responsible for it. What are you going to do about it? Now, he gave power over Job for a reason. Very important, he gave power over Job for a reason. Job even so says so. You have put the serpent over me. Why have you done that, God? And of course, he talked about, well, you're protecting his skin for skin. I mean, he'll do anything to keep himself alive. Now, stretch out your hand and touch his bone and his flesh. He's told Satan is asking God. Now, remember, he's asking God to touch the bone and the flesh of Job. And for sure, he'll curse you in your face. And so he said, yeah, behold, go ahead and do it, but spare his life. Who's responsible for that action? Whom? Speak louder. Okay. God's responsible for the whole thing. And by the time we get into the chapter, into the book, we'll figure out what it's all about. But right now, we have to figure out this man named Job, right? Which when you read it, you can't put, what is it that God has against him?
Nothing.
At this point, we know nothing. And guess, you know what? Here comes his wife. Verse 9. He's been very critical about her. You know what? Why be critical about her? Why says what? You know what we're going through? My personal opinion, what I think we're going through mind, Job, get it finished, end it. Go ahead and curse him and end your life. It's just too much. She also lost 7 sons and 3 daughters. Sometimes we don't picture that, do we? Only Job did it. She lost nothing. Wait a minute. Somehow, he has 7 sons and he has 2 daughters from some woman. I would assume, you know, and I would assume it would be his wife. Now, she is not saying for her to curse God. She is saying, why you hold fast your integrity? Curse Elohim and die. Get it over with. Of course, he said, you speak like a foolish woman. Well, that's nice. Nice thing to say. I don't know exactly what that refers to. I hate to say that, dude, but that's the way it is. Yeah? Okay, now we go on down. We are going to, we may touch chapter 3. I'm not quite sure. Let's only got 2:30, right? Hey, I'm going to do pretty good. We don't need to go through every detail, every verse, every jot, and every tittle, because it will take forever. And I don't want to do that. I want to go back to Exodus when I can. So they all sat down. That's 3 friends. We'll talk about them a little later. You know, and they saw him from afar, and they could not recognize him. He was so bad. His bruises were horrible. He didn't look like the Job of the greatest man of the East anymore. He looked like a weak man. And they sat down with him on the ground. Interesting number. Did you notice that interesting number? 7 days. Why didn't they sit down with him for 40? Because 7 is the concluding of the matter. So they sat down there with 7 days and they said nothing to him. Remember, these are his friends. And for they saw he was in great sorrow and grief. Now at this point in time, we see an unusual story. We're set there with the complete blankness. Okay, what is it you have in mind, God? What do I learn from it? Is it really for me to not be like Job? Or is it for me not to be like his friends? What is it that I'm not supposed to be like?
His friends.
His friends, okay. Now, I want to ask you a real, don't answer it. I'm just going to ask you a real honest question. Because we're going to go, we're going to hear what Job has to say first. As we get into his friends, how many times has we as individuals or as a group charged somebody with something, that's the reason why God has cursed you, because you are not doing this, you're not keeping the Sabbath, you're not keeping the holidays, you're keeping Christmas, you're keeping... How many times do we judge somebody because they don't do what we view as righteousness and uprightness? It's very common in books of Jewish people, because it's written right here in the book of Job for the Jewish people, and the Christian people. It's called judging and judging and judging and judging on information you have nothing to know why. At this point in time, we haven't gotten very far. Do you know what the judgment was that God had against Job? Do you know why he did this to Job? Well, you might think, well, because he did something wrong. He was sinned. He did something and God had to correct him for it. Well, it does say he did, but we have to figure out what he did. Yes.
I was just thinking, sometimes it's in Deuteronomy, it says he brings about these things just to see if you'll keep his commandments or not. Not that you did anything wrong.
That's great, but I understand you're saying what's so fantastic about this thing here is we have the picture and say, what is Job's attitude now? Chapter 3. We don't have to read all that stuff down because there's an awful lot of stuff here. The chapter 3, we're going to null it in a. We talk about the day he is born, right? Basically, may it perish and never exist. Well, it's a little late. It's already there. Instead of about 365 days a year, he wanted to be 364 days a year. It didn't work. And he wanted that day to be completely Hoshech time. So there'd be 24 hours of blackness. No moon, no stars, no sun. All be Hoshech. Like in Genesis chapter 1, verse 2. And he didn't want Elohim even to look for it. God, don't even seek it out. What else did he want? He didn't want even the light to shine on it, meaning light of any kind of truth. I mean, let it stay in darkness. Let death take it. Let death claim it. So he really was upset. Now, you know, let me ask you a question. Don't answer it. Have you ever met someone who said, I wasn't even asked to be born? And all his trials and troubles and difficulties and curses and blessings, but curses and curses. And they blame their mother and they blame their father. Guess what? Job just blamed his mother for not killing him at birth. Blame God, technically, for not aborting it. That's a pretty powerful thing, don't you think? Now, you get a full feeling when you go through this thing. He says here, now let's go back to verse 11. Why did I not die at birth? Have you ever thought somebody would wish they would never been born? And they should have died. They should have aborted him. Go down to these institutions where they just ripped the kid right out of the womb. That's what Job was wishing for. Why did I not perish when I came out of the womb? You get a feeling here. We don't have to go through every one of these things because I don't want to go in great detail because it would be a very, very laborious situation. Verse 13, for now I would have lain still and been quiet. I would have been asleep. Then I would have been at rest. If God just done it in the first place. Why didn't he wipe me out before I was born? Why did he allow me to be born? Why did that mother of mine open the womb for? All right. He's upset with his mother. Upset with God for creating his mother to have a child, him. He was kind of like, let's say, have you met somebody who was feeling sorry for himself? Chapter 2 is Job feeling sorry for himself. Damn the day he was born, cursed the day he was born, wishing his mother never had him, wishing his mother should have aborted him, all that kind of stuff, you know. Woe is me, woe is me. We have to understand that's his thinking pattern at this point in time. He had four woes. Not just one, not just two, not just three, he had four of them. Has God ever done that to you? Where's your first woe? Can you remember your first woe? I can't remember mine, because it never happened to me. It never, I don't say it never will, I don't see any reason why God would ever give me woe number one, woe number two, woe number three, or woe number four. I don't see any reason. Because see, I'm not the greatest man in the United States of America. If I was, I'd probably be punished for no. That's why I decided not to run for president, by the way, just in case. After all of this chit-chatting and complaining about his miserable life and his day of birth and so on and so forth, I go down to verse 26. I am not at ease, nor am I what? Quiet. So now, remember, Job was the first one to speak. His three friends, there's a fourth one over there, which comes in later. Here's his three friends. They said nothing to him. Now Job is saying all these things. Feeling sorry for himself. And now he says, I'm not going to keep quiet. I'm going to let my anger, my resentment, my bitterness come out. I have no rest. Nothing but trouble comes. Now, how have you ever felt that way before? Have you ever felt that way before? Hey, you're doing pretty good. I'm actually going to go into the fourth chapter for a minute. We're going pretty fast. I'm glad, because I didn't want to hang on to this particular book for a very long time. Now we're talking about his very first friend. Right? Eliphaz of Temanites, is one of those kings of what's called in tribe of Esau as a duke, a king. This particular man, reason why he was friend of Job, because he was like Job, a king. But Job was greater than he. Now listen to the comments he has to say about him. We won't go through probably all of them, but I do want to go through some of them. He said, now one attempts a word with you. Will you become impatient? Will you become offended? Now, some of you says weary. In Hebrew it means, will you become impatient? Will you become offended? Who can withhold himself from speaking? So, see, Job spoke first. And called all the complaints he had. All the agonies he had. And wish he never was. And then he says something else about him. Listen very carefully, verse 3. Surely you have instructed many. Oh. And You have strengthened the weak hands. That's a compliment, don't you think? Your words have upheld him who was stumbling. Wow. And you have strengthened the feeble knees. This man was an upright, just, and honorable. And his friend says, that's who you are. Now, however, he says, verse 5, because it comes upon you, and you are disturbed, another Hebrew word, or you are now afraid. It touches you, and you are troubled. Is not your reverence of your reverence of your confidence and the integrity of your ways your hope? Now remember, God said he has integrity. God says he's a righteous man. Ezekiel calls out how righteous he really was, that, hey, God's going to make sure that he's going to survive, but not his sons and daughters. Pretty hard stuff, right? And so he keeps on going. Now remember now, who is purchased being innocent? Who's being punished being innocent? Job, you're being punished because you're not. You're guilty. Now, have you ever done that with somebody? Or maybe you thought about doing that to somebody who wasn't walking according to the plan, and they have this trial, this trial, this trial. They have maybe four bad things running right one after the other. You say, that's because you are not listening to God. Right? That's an accusation, which we, as that young man said, don't be like. Don't be like. Don't accuse something you have no knowledge of. He's trying to assume, he put an assumption that you are guilty, Job. This is the reason why those four woes came upon you, Job, because of you, of your guilty, Job, of what God has. He said, now, where do you see the upright ever cut off? Wait a minute. Job, you claim to be upright. You claim to have integrity, and now you're cut off. You must be not of God. Or you have transgressed. Yes?
The chink in his armor that I see was his fear. Because he said it right there in verse 25, for the thing which greatly I feared has come upon me.
Correct.
So it sounds like that was the chink in his armor, was his fear.
Oh, we'll find out. God willing, won't move today though. Because God gave him credit for fearing him. God blessed him because he feared him.
But you can have righteous fear and you can have...
He didn't say that Abraham had unrighteous fear of God or righteous fear of God. He praised Job because he had fear of him. That is a great thing about Job. It's not the negative that he terrified or frightened of Job, of God, because God's going to do something bad to him. No. He didn't, he wasn't that terrified. He had a fear of God.
He did have a reverent fear of God.
Do you think that he did not have reverent fear of God?
He
still has that. The story's not finished.
But he also had a physical fear, which is a man.
Why did he bring forth the four curses? Because Job didn't have the right kind of fear? Doesn't say that. Careful how you interpret what's being written. Yes.
Through the years, I'm old. Through the years, there have been often that I've dealt with people and they're in trouble, they're in a hole, they can't get out of it. Sometimes it's easier than others to see, okay, you have to have God help you out of it, obey him and he'll help you out of it. But one thing I found out, a lot of the trials, because I've been through all kinds of stuff, been doing this for 45 years. A lot of times I judged myself as well as others. for guilt and for sin and for blah, 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 even though I couldn't figure it out. And come to find out at this end of my life that a lot of the stuff I walked through had nothing to do with me. It had to do with other people that were going to come and say, I'm in trouble, okay, and I could be of value to them.
Okay.
So I judged myself wrongly.
Well, I agree with you on that one. What I want to try to get your viewpoint aiming at is not what Job did or did not do. I want your thinking to head for what the Elohim did do. It's Elohim who is in charge. And so we must learn what is it that you are trying to show this generation that's thousands of years later. What were you thinking? I have always taught you people, and I always will teach you people, that I read Devarim Elohim, I see and understand this is what God has said. This is how I think. This is how I act. This is the way I am. If you want to know who I am, read, study, look. Everything you want to know about me is there. You can actually see me face to face. Oh, I can't do that. Well, yes, you can. God still says so. We don't go there today. So we're at this point. I'm going to have to wrap it up real quick. It's 10 minutes too. He went on, verse 10, it says, a roaring lion and a fierce lion. And the teeth of the young lion are broken. Verse 11, the old lion perishes for lack of Job, you're the old lion. You're perishing. That's pretty kind of insult, right? Now, kind of funny when you look at it from that point of view. But let's continue on. This man said something very unusual. Verse 12. I don't know what he saw. I don't know what he heard. I'm going to take his word at it. Okay? I don't look at these three men as liars. I see these three men as greatly not knowing what God has in mind, because they're not damned for eternity. They're got reprieved at the end of the story. Now, let's go look at them. It's easy for us to look at these three men as the worst three men in the face of the history of mankind. However, they're just ordinary people like you and like me who see somebody in trouble and we say, oh, either in our hearts, our mind, or our mouth, say, they're not following God. That's why God's cursed them. Right? So we had to find the evidence with our eyes. We had to find the evidence with our ears. We had to find the evidence with our hands, our feet. We had to see everything. And then we can make a sound righteous judgment, because we don't know the heart. Therefore, we can at least judge them on the outwardness, as these three men did, of Job's four woes. Job, you're held accountable. God's against you because you, Job, you have no integrity, you have no uprightness, you have no justice, you have no nothing. But Jacob, Job later on says, I don't have that. Even though God said in chapter 1 he did. He says, I don't have those things. But yet everybody saw him that way. This man saw him, wow, you have instructed many, and you have strengthened the weak hands. Your words have upheld him who was stumbling, and you have strengthened the feeble knees. Does this sound like a loser? Does it sound like he is an unjust man? Does it sound like he has no integrity? This is the mark of an excellent man. Pray be God, I can come close to that. I'm nowhere near that. If I'm half the man he is, then I may have something to boast about. But I'm not. Do I respect Job? Yeah. Do I respect what God has to do with Job? Yeah. What do I need to learn from you, God? Verse 12. A word was secretly brought to me, and my ears received a whisper of it. How did you receive it? How did you get it? This is what he says, verse 13. In disquieting thoughts from the visions of the night when sleep fell upon men. Fear came upon me and trembling that made all my bones shake. Then a spirit passed before my face. The hair on my body stood up. It, that spirit, stood still. But I could not discern its appearance. A form before my eyes, there was silence. Then I heard a voice. Can a mortal be more righteous than Elohei? Can a man be more pure than his maker? If he puts no trust in his servants, meaning Elohei, he charges his angels with error or folly. Really? You mean the angels of God do foolish things? According to here, yeah. And he says here, this is Septuagint in my ear, whereas he trusts not in his servants, and perceives perverseness or folly in his angels. They're not pure. I mean, God is the one that is pure. Even his most highest ranking, if I can use that terminology, hate to use the word terminology because people think about a rank, the highest ranking of angel you could think of, it doesn't even match up to the purity of God. He finds them, okay. You got the picture wrong. God's angels have something wrong. That's what according to here it is. Yes. Okay, never mind. He says, much more, verse 19. He said, this is what a voice was telling him this, see. How much more those who dwell in the houses of clay. I really hard time understanding that one. He turns around and he says, for their foundation is dust. Probably referring to human beings, right? Then the next one, he says, is very unusual. Who are crushed in the face of a moth. That's literally what it says in Hebrew. Crushed in the face of a moth. That's interesting. They are broken in pieces from morning until evening, and they perish forever. There is no one regarding what's taking place. Does not their own excellency go away? They die even without wisdom. Who? Those who dwell in houses of clay. Now, what do you think about that statement? And that clay has no wisdom.
That clay has no wisdom.
Yes.
It would be very disturbing to have, when you were at your lowest point, to have someone say to you, hey, you're just a person and you're all going to die.
We're going to stop right there. We could go in Job 5, but it's already 3 o'clock. And this is the same man. Like next week, maybe we'll get more in detail about what he had to say. Some of these words are very interesting to look at and analyze and think, but I have to come to you and have to tell you that when I look at Job and I study him, study what God is doing with him, I have to ask myself, what is it you are saying? What is the thing that Noah, Daniel, and Job have in common, besides righteousness? Daniel gave you an answer.